Hello, I'm Dr. Jamie Kunkel. I have the pleasure of introducing you to two of my favorite people in this world, Emily Pasek, Dr. Emily Pasek, and Dr. Cynthia Keller. They both work at a center that I used to, you know, actually frequent and work at as well. It's called Center to Wellness in Kirkland, Washington. I will go through each of them as a short introduction here, and then we can dive right in. I'll start with Cynthia. Dr. Keller, MD, is a pediatrician who is passionate about and specializes in the care of families with both well and chronically ill children. She is triple boarded in pediatrics, integrative medicine, and anti-aging and regenerative medicine. And she runs the wellness center that I mentioned in the Seattle region, in the Seattle, Washington area, and is proud to be recently promoted to SSRP faculty. I'll let her tell you about the SSRP, but this is a peptide education with Dr. Seeds, and I'll let her elaborate on that in a few moments here. But I didn't want to leave Dr. Emily Pasek out here for too long. She holds a doctorate in naturopathic medicine and a master's in Ayurvedic science. I think she was in that first class at Bastyr University. That's really cool. She works as an integrative pediatric and family practice, the same one as Dr. Keller here. And she was actually a resident under Dr. Keller and myself some time ago after she graduated. She spent time in India learning some of this Ayurvedic medicine with top doctors and incorporates multiple Ayurvedic modalities in treating chronic conditions, which is really fascinating stuff. Her passions include mold and mycotoxin illness, full body detoxification, parasites, yeast, chronic pain, and hormones. Really cool stuff. So let's get started here. And we'll talk about, actually, if you want to, Cynthia, you're welcome to discuss a little bit more about what you do with peptides, because a lot of people actually in this community really enjoy peptides. We have peptide summits and all kinds of things. So it'd be nice to, elaborate a little bit there and then just a little plug in for later.
Okay. Yeah. So actually, first, can I just tell you a little bit about our clinic? Or I mean, you know about our clinic, but we're a group of, let's see, there's four naturopaths, myself. I'm the only MD. We have acupuncturists, massage therapists. We do neurofeedback. We have my favorite family clinical psychologist works with us. And I think our gift is treating the whole person. So, you know, like we do treat people with chronic mold issue in SIRS, you know, chronic Lyme, mast cell activation disorder, PANDAS, but really what we treat as human beings. And they happen to often have issues like that. So, and I think what one of the things that sets us apart is our collaborative model. So, which was really what my mission was here. And so we have ground rounds weekly about our patients. You know, Dr. Pasek and I treat, you know, all the same patients because we have a set number of families, honestly, most of which have been with me since their children were born, and now they're in their 20s and such. And so we both care for the same families, and that's really wonderful because we can, including the child psychologist and everyone, we can sort of do wraparound care. And so that, I think, is one of the things that makes the care we give special. And then, yes, I'm super excited about my recent faculty appointmentship. So Dr. Seeds started an organization called SSRP, which stands for Seed Scientific Research and Performance. And really, while if you sort of like think about Dr. Seeds, you usually think peptides, but really his gift, he's awfully smart, is about teaching. I mean, these are my words about what he does. I don't know. You'd have to ask him for what he thinks he does. But I think he teaches the biochemistry and looking at the human body, both in wellness and then in dysfunction, so that using different modalities makes sense. And in, again, these are my words, not his, is that it's sort of like teaching a person to fish as opposed to feeding them fish. So while we do use peptides, I think what it's really about is understanding the cell in the body. And that fits in really well to how we work as a clinic because, you know, while I do use peptides, I'm certainly not like peptides isn't my single-handed thing. It's about treating humans. And so, so there, that's it.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. Would you like to add anything to that, Dr. Pasek?
The cool thing is, and what Dr. Keller was just saying about the clinic being an integrative model is that when she comes back from a conference or a weekend, she writes everything up and teaches all the doctors in the clinic so that we can all not only understand what she's doing with the families, but so that we can all use, you know, the same medicine. And that is a huge benefit to the practitioners, but mainly the families and patients.
Yeah.
And then I have to say that also Emily does the same thing. So Emily just undersold herself there, that when she is also equally driven and probably more driven than I am, even to read all weekend and dive into things. And she also then comes back and reports to us. And honestly, just Dr. Pasek is phenomenal as a human and a healer as well. So,
right, yeah. On. I can attest to that. All the above.
Yeah.
all right. Well, we're here to talk about mold. So mold is an interesting conversation. Everybody has a different sort of take on it, I would say. Not everybody treats, you know, children, pediatrics and stuff as well. And so I know there can be some challenges there. And that's why I wanted to bring you guys on, actually, was to talk about, you know, how do you navigate something as complicated as mold with children, with the parents of children, even, and, you know, do the things you need to do, get the workups you need to get worked up, and not get into, you know, too chaotic of a realm of, you know, gotta go here, all the, yeah, you know, this kind of thing. And children do heal really nicely. So I think, yeah, maybe if you get the right things in line, maybe they'll, you know, yes, move in a good direction. But there's obviously some challenges and roadblocks along the way there. So yeah, if you guys could talk a little bit about, you know, how you approach these types of situations as a, you know, primary care practice, as a pediatric practice, as an integrative practice, you know, all this good stuff. Leave the floor open.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. Sure. I think, you know, we actually did quite a bit of time thinking, Dr. Pasek and I, about how to be most useful here. And, you know, you have all the experts in mold also speaking, and I agree with you. I think one of the things that we had to offer that was different was, our thinking about things and our integrative model, but also that we really love working with children and families, and that, you know, since I was a pediatrician first, that was sort of the basis of the clinic initially. And you can't like working with kids unless you really like working with moms. And I think that you know, we do sort of have a few recommendations that we would say to both the moms and dads who are watching this, the parents, and then also providers who might not be as used to working with families as opposed to just adults. And so I would say that the top three things that I wish all moms, parents would know about helping their child with chronic illness is that one is that I want to put a shout out to them to trust themselves. You know, mom's gut instinct about their children is almost always right. And if not, it's real close. And so I want to remind them to trust themselves. Two is, please don't scatter. I would say like the number one problem that we have when a patient finds us, if they haven't been with us since birth, those ones, you know, have already understood this, but is that not to scatter, is that these moms are honestly smarter than most of the providers I know about a lot of healing modalities, but they tend to, without the guidance of a provider who can help them think clearly and logically, that they have, you know, they're trying hyperbaric at the same time as they're trying a new peptide, at the same time as they're doing, you know, this really deep, in-depth detox. And they heard Dr. Klinghart speak about something, and so they're doing one of his protocols. And it, like, they have then no idea about what worked, what's going on. And so, like, please don't scatter. And then, I can't remember what my third thing was. Third thing was, oh yeah, mold's not good for anybody. So like, please, if you want your child to get better, don't spend money on anything else before you get the mold exposure fixed. So we live in the Pacific Northwest. Mold's not good for anyone. Don't spend money on a new hyperbaric oxygen chamber if you have mold in the bedroom. Just like, don't do that. So that would be the three things for parents, and the three things for providers who maybe aren't used to working with kids. One is trust the mom. So I'm back to that again, that the mom will tell you almost everything you need to know. Two is ask the child. So we do this thing at our clinic that I don't know I've done since a gazillion years, but is that I ask the kid, if I had a magic wand and could give you anything you wanted, what three things do you want? Because while the mom might have an agenda and I know what I think I want to have happen, the kid is actually the one who's important. So if what they really want is to get to the dance that's next week, you know, that's a very, I might be looking for long-term solutions and the parent is worried about something else. But if I don't aim for the headache that they wake up with that makes their life hard and the dance next week, then I've failed. And so I really use that to dictate care for us. And then the third thing is to remember that the provider is actually maybe the number one treatment. So that I believe that love heals and walking with families is the important piece. You know, again, we treat humans, not sort of specific illnesses, and we have a lot of modalities and we try them and we use our smarts, but a lot of times that doesn't work the first time. And so, you know, even if you don't have a treatment yet that's working, walking with them and not abandoning them, I think is really important. So that, like, I'm the treatment, Emily's the treatment, and that love and care heals.
Yeah. Would you like to add anything to that, Dr. Pasek?
Yeah, the one thing that I think maybe Cynthia, you missed in the chronic why we are so good at what we're doing with families and kids is that I think what sets us apart, aside from the love model, is that we check in really frequently. And like one thing you said was, what if they want to go to the dance this Saturday, or what if it's her birthday on Saturday? You know, and so it's not checking in every 6 weeks or every 3 months. It's like, do this and then call me on Saturday, or call me on Monday morning, or here's what you're going to do for the next 3 days. And I think that short-term checking in, because like you said, Dr. Kunkel, kids heal fast. And so we can see movement quicker with pediatrics.
Yeah. So having an open communication line and, you know, being available, I think, you know, is a big deal with chronic disease in general. And yeah, with kids too, would you say even, that makes perfect sense.
And Emily, you remind me of one thing too, is that I really should put a plug into for our nurse or our nurses who give at least as much love and time as I do and you do, you know, and so a plug for them that we wouldn't be as good without Tiffany and Natalie, who really are an important part of the care.
Yeah. Having solid support staff is really key.
Yeah. Great. Lost my earbud. Just one sec.
Go for it.
Okay. I have small ears, so they jump out. Yeah.
So when you're ready, so why did you set up a wellness clinic like this? What was it about? Why do you think it was the only way to help people get well? You know, in what ways did you feel like this type of center was going to be the way?
Right. I knew I wasn't going to be able to work for the man, you know, or like in a system that was already set up. I don't think that the current health model works. And so I was offered a job right out of residency and I said, that's fine, but I have to be a partner. And they were like, okay. So I even went into a small private practice with the power to dictate the way I gave care. But even that, after, I don't know, 10 years, became pretty uncomfortable just because I was more and more interested in sort of a wellness model. And that doesn't fit very well in with current system. And so I realized I was going to have to either give care the way everyone else did, or I was going to have to create a new model. And so at the time, there were no pediatric clinics like this, sort of in a concierge, where we sort of took a bunch of families on sort of as like a co-op, you know, sort of like we're all committed to this kind of care. And that was working really well, but there were things I didn't know how to do. And there were specialists out there that I didn't know if I could trust to do the right things with my families. And so one at a time, I started collecting specialists or, you know, providers who were like-minded. And I really do think that wraparound kind of care is the only way to give good care, or the easiest way. Let's do that. So yeah. I guess the current system wasn't working, so I had to create something else.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I know these complex chronic diseases don't always fit well into the boxes, so to speak.
No.
And mold, unfortunately, doesn't get enough attention in the conventional world, not as much as we'd like it to, for example. So, well, let's dive into, you know, how you guys are evaluating these patients, when you're looking for mold and, you know, when you're expecting a mold exposure, when do you think mold? It's always mold, right? Just kidding.
Well, we do live in the Pacific Northwest, so yes. There's like pretty much everyone's exposed just walking around. But I think for me, and then you can speak to when we think mold, but I think mold when someone becomes dysregulated, right? So remember that we deal with human beings, right? And some of those human beings are well, and some of those human beings are worse sick and now are maybe more well because we've been working with them a while. So when one of those becomes dysregulated, and that will show up in a lot of different ways, right? So if it's sort of just kind of pure mold SIR stuff, then, you know, they're going to have brain fog, they're going to put on weight, they're going to be fatigued. All of them is going to hurt. So, you know, someone who is well and then suddenly is not well, you know, a mold exposure is pretty fast usually. Although you might not notice it as quickly, but our patients are pretty good at knowing,
You're speaking about folks that already have other illnesses, perhaps, or
yes. So we have a scattering of people. We have some people who were just straight peds, and they are sort of mostly well, but they still get exposed to mold. Mm-hmm. And then we have some patients who have chronic illness, who for the most part we have brought back to wellness. So things like chronic Lyme, or they might exhibit things like PANDAS or POTS or mast cell activation disorders. But my view of that is really that's the body tipped, or that's the bucket full, and that's what you're seeing. But these people don't usually have five illnesses, right? It might look like five illnesses. We might be able to diagnose them with five illnesses, but that doesn't make any sense, right? Like something happened to dysregulate them. And so our goal is always, you know, to figure out what dysregulated them, remove it from their environment or their body. So if it's chronic Lyme, I should have said chronic Lyme in there of the things that we handle, adrenal insufficiency, sort of anything dysregulated, right?
Yes.
So we figure out what the thing was. We remove that from their environment. We try to calm whatever happened and sort of acutely band-aid the issue that showed up. So if it's PANDAS, I'd probably give antibiotics and steroids. If it was mast cells that got dysregulated because of something, then I would do a mast cell protocol. If it was POTS, I would do whatever needed to be done to reset their autonomic nervous system, etc. I would give them hydrocortisone if they were in frank adrenal insufficiency. But that, like, really, that's only to sort of hold them so that their daily function is okay. But you're not going to get real wellness unless you figure out what dysregulated them. And for a vast majority of our clientele, if you take it sort of back, I think like a sweater, that the I want to pull the thread so that the whole thing starts to unravel. And so much of the time, it's actually parasites or mold. And if you don't figure that out, well, I guess parasites might be the underlying thing, but mold can dysregulate quickly. And if you don't figure that out and remove that, you know, you can only sort of band-aid someone. And so for us, when one of our patients dysregulates or comes in dysregulated, we and Emily sort of spoke to this with, and you did too, about kids heal so well. And because we sort of learned all this on children, we know how quickly to evaluate kind of, is that the issue? So one of the things that we do is that if I think it might be mold, or if we think it might be mold, my nurse, you know, the family calls and says, oh no, Bobby is falling apart again. And so we say, well, A, do you know, is he exposed to mold? Oh yeah, he went antiquing on Wednesday. Well, that's maybe not the best thing to do in wet Western Washington, right? So then we make sure they don't go back there. And we will often say, do this, you know, take some lumbar kinase, some GI detox, and come in daily for 10 minutes of oxygen. And I can explain more why that's our go-to thing for sort of quick evaluation. But we do that for 2 or 3 days. And they're seeing us daily for the oxygen, right? So we're checking in. And at the end of 3 days, if they're a lot better, then probably it was mold. And that doesn't mean they have to keep coming in every day, but we have our answer. If we do that for 3 days and they're no different, well, then I'm going to rethink. It might not have been the mold exposure. It doesn't mean that mold was good for them, but that might have been just the priming. But that wasn't the thread I needed to pull to unravel it. And so we think mold a lot because of where we are. Recap the answer to your question. Yes. And two is, how do we know? Is that, you know, our current best test is to give them lumbar kinase, GI detox, and oxygen. It's just really quick.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I definitely want to talk more about that. And Emily, if you want to add to that too, I mean, the acute mold test treatment that you're doing is really interesting. I don't hear so much about that. So,
We made it up.
Oh, good. Well, that's awesome. I would love to hear more about that. If there's anything else to add from Emily, because yeah, we don't always hear about those things.
The only other thing I add is that we usually throw in glutathione.
Oh yeah. Thanks.
And because we're talking kids, you know, obviously we treat adults too, but I'm going to try to stay with kids. The taste of glutathione is not something they're willing to do. So if they can take a pill, but they're not going to do glutathione, I would just say next best NAC. So trying to get something to get right, their detox flowing. And the other thing that I want to mention is to kind of step back and look at sort of the season or the environment. Like, did they just go back to school and they're in a moldy classroom? Mm-hmm. Was there a moldy pumpkin in the classroom?
Oh my God.
Did they bring the Christmas boxes down from the attic?
Yeah.
Was it super rainy in Seattle?
Yeah.
And everyone came in flaring? And those are some of those big... we start to look around the clinic. And again, a benefit of us all being with these same families is that we're looking around and everyone's flaring. So they might have completely different symptoms, but that's another clue, right? And we're starting to ask the questions like, oh, did you just bring the Christmas boxes down from the attic, or we'll put them back into the attic in January? So I think that's kind of an easy place to go, because one thing I find is that practitioners get really scared and their first step is always, do I have to test the person? Do they have to do this really expensive urine test? And often the answer is no. And I think doing these more simple evaluations of, again, like the environment or the season or this quick trial of like 3 days of our acute treatment, I think is actually a lot easier.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And then...
can I just ahead. Add two Please. More things about that? Sorry. And one of the things that you forgot to say was that we'll all flare. So, if we have a patient who comes in and Tiff is coughing and wheezing and Emily's like, oh my gosh, and I'm starting to flush, then we know that that poor person is got mold on their clothes. So we'll sometimes, we have been able to make the diagnosis before because we all get like knocked over when they come into clinic. Em is doing body work on them and like, I don't know, they're like fluffing their stuff. So that would be one thing. And, the other thing is that, you know, everyone has limited time, energy, and money. And anytime I can, I want their money and time and energy spent on healing. So I, in particular, we don't order any tests we don't actually need the answer to. So, you know, like for instance, you know, if I wanted to know if that person had a mold issue, you can get the house tested, you can test their urine, you can do all this stuff, but all of that is going to be expensive and take time. Mm-hmm. And in 3 days, we have a pretty good answer about how. We won't have like all the answers, but we'd at least know it's worth our time, energy, and money to further look into this issue or it's not.
Okay. Yeah. Very interesting. So you would if you weren't getting your answer in 3 days, but you're still expecting mold, is that when you would go into testing or, you know?
Well, to be honest, if I was expecting some change and the kid and the mom said to me, they're like absolutely no different with the oxygen, let's say like their brain doesn't sort of light up at all.
Yeah.
Then I would spend my first time, energy, and money trying to figure out what that other thing was. It doesn't mean I would never look there, but like I'm looking for a quick, you know, I
you feel like you're going to get some movement there though. You're going to get,
that's
some,
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. That's
traction.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Traction. Yeah. That's fair. Okay. Very cool. do you, I got, yeah, you know, it sounds like your communities, you know, you guys are pretty close, at least as far as you have a concierge practice, you know, your families are pretty close and everything like this. So yes. They probably trust you guys. Like, you know, if you're going to do this yes. thing and that thing, or if you think it's this thing or that thing, it's probably not a super big deal. That's not always the case. I know working with pediatrics, you know, if the parents maybe are in disagreements or other things like this, how do you navigate some of those challenges, you know, with children and trying to work these things up? Or maybe, you know, if you say, I'm pretty sure it's mold, but then the urine test isn't there, or the ERMI isn't there, or something like that, and one parent's a skeptic or something. And maybe you guys don't get those people, but I just got to pose that question.
Yeah, I think, again, we have the luxury, the way we set it up is it's just the patient and the family is part of the collaboration and the collaborative team. So yes. one of the benefits to, you know, they signed up as a concierge, so they already said, like, we're all in.
Yeah.
You know, we so want to know what Dr. Pasek thinks. We so want to know what Cynthia, you know, Dr. Keller thinks.
Yeah.
That I think we have the luxury of almost always they'll do. I mean, we would not lead them astray, but right. they would pretty much follow us blindly.
Yeah. Fair. So you guys build that rapport. I mean, because you guys are awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you build that rapport in the beginning. So yeah.
yeah.
And yeah, if you had like, okay, yeah, I won't go down that road then. I was wondering, you know, cause I get these things sometimes myself with kids,
right.
and parents. So that's why I was wondering. Okay. Well, no, that's important. I mean, that's why, as you said, the practitioner is really, you know, the key here, I think,
yes.
you know, and having that trust is very important.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's see here.
Hey,
so,
Jamie, one thing I'll say as maybe the segue in terms of how, if you do need buy-in, say you need buy-in from one of the parents.
Yes.
That does happen sometimes. I would say that testing, just like she was saying, test the house.
Yes.
That is going to be more expensive testing. That's going to be a bigger deal. Generally, the first thing we're going to do is a Marcon swab, nasal swab.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that... it is cheaper than urine testing. We do think it's a little more effective as to like what's happening right now. And man, do we find some interesting things on those nasal swabs.
Oh yeah. Yes.
And we've had a couple of conversations with Microbiology DX is who we use. We love them. And we've needed some help navigating, you know, those first 100 swabs or so going yeah. like, is this normal? And what do we do with this? And so, so that's been a huge resource for us. We're still swabbing regularly every week. We don't generally swab the whole family because if we swab, you know, one or two out of a family of four, let's say, and everyone's got some funky symptoms, we kind of just assume, okay, well now we need to test the house. So that we have like a stepwise approach that usually starts with a Marcon swab. And I generally run a bacterial culture and at least the first time for mold and yeast.
Yeah.
It's kind of optional if they want to spend the money on biofilm. I assume if it comes back positive for Marcons and or positive for mold, I'm going to be treating with a biofilm agent anyway.
Right.
Right. So it depends on how much money they want to spend. If they want to throw in the extra $80 or whatever it is for biofilm, but I'm to check to see the level of biofilm, but I'm going to test and I'm going to treat for biofilm anyway. I also want to know what else is in their sinuses and why. You know,
right.
we have gotten some interesting information on like, is there gut bacteria in their nose?
Yes.
And I would say like 10% of the time I actually find that.
I've seen
that.
So, yes.
Yeah, right?
Yucca.
So we're getting a look at kind of the overall immune system.
Biome too, yeah.
Yeah, and I sort of think of the leaky sinuses, just like mm-hmm. with leaky yes. blood-brain barrier, leaky gut. And so we're seeing that when we see these systemic issues and then we're seeing this leaky sinus, it's like everything is just sort of going everywhere. And so we think, well, your gut bacteria really shouldn't be in your nose. And when it is for maybe four members of a family, then we have to step back and say, like, we should talk about how much you're cleaning the bathroom or
oh, yeah.
washing your hands, you know, things like
yeah.
that.
Sure. So that would be kind of the first tier of testing you would look at, you know.
Yeah.
Simple,
yeah.
simple, easy. You get results, you know, at least preliminaries within a week or so. So
right.
it's really yeah. fast.
Well, and you know, so much of the symptoms that people complain about are neurologic or emotional, right? And
sure.
you cannot detoxify your brain. You know, this is sort of back to the body wants to heal. So if you can just help it to get the things out of the way, it'll heal. You cannot detoxify the brain if there's, you know, spore, if there's, you know, mycelium going up into the, you know, into the brain and, you know, in mold in particular, right. You know, you cannot fully recover someone from SIRS if you, you know, if your MSH is down, and that isn't going to get better unless you have, you know, stopped Marcon's, right? Marcon's itself maybe isn't this horrible, nasty dude, but he or she, it, makes neurotoxins, you know, that go right up into the brain. And those two do not allow MSH, let's say, to recover. So even if you do all the mold treatments, Emily's right. At the end of the day, if you don't take care of that, you're not going to get better.
Yeah. No, right on. Do you find then that mold is a trigger for, you know, something like Pan's Pandas, you know, like a neuroinflammatory condition? So they could have an exposure and they'll just go into a Pandas flare?
That's absolutely right. Yes. So remember, I talked about, like, you get someone upright. And again, all you have to do sometimes is just remove the rock. They then right themselves. But once they're here, mold is a very common trigger for this again. And so sometimes, most of the time, when one of our patients who was here, the mom calls and says they're acting out again in a Pandas way, or a mom will call me and say, like, you got to retreat his Lyme because his Lyme is back. Almost always the treatment for that isn't treat their Pandas or treat their Lyme. It's remove the mold exposure.
Sure. So right, that's when you do your investigation. Yeah. You're like, oh, does it look like mold, smell like mold? Yeah.
That's right.
Put the nasal swab, it is mold. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, fair. I'm just curious. I'm always curious about this too, because everybody kind of goes after Marcon's in a slightly different way. Although, you know, you always hear about the bags and stuff like this. But for children, I mean, do you guys approach that a little bit differently than maybe, you know, throwing a bunch of, you know, crazy stuff into the nose for adults? We can just get away with that sometimes. But maybe kids don't like stuff up their nose. I don't know.
Right.
Unless they like to push stuff up there, but that's a whole other story. they usually blow things out, right?
Yes.
So could you guys give me some of your secrets there?
I'll let you take
that. Okay. Yeah. So I usually start with an Argentin 23 silver nasal spray. And I would say 95% of the kids can do that. We do have kids on the autism spectrum, and that makes it a little bit harder to do a nasal spray or really any treatment. so there is an option to do like a nebulizer, not a nasoneb. So a nasoneb, which I'm talking the fire hose. I have had some teens do the nasoneb, but that are very compliant. But generally, a nasoneb is even hard for adults to do. So, I mean, that is like your maximal. You know, like that's the best thing we can do. But for kids, I start with the Argentin 23 because it's cheap and really effective. And so, if it doesn't work, they didn't spend $200 on a compounded spray that the kid's never going to do. So I start with the thing that's $23 or whatever. And that if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Then throw a ton of money away. And I find that it works most of the time, but if it doesn't, like if we found MRSA, sometimes I'd rather get a compounded med, like a bag. But that's what I like about the microbiology DX is that it gives you culture and sensitivity. And we had this come up just a couple of weeks ago where there was MRSA and it was not sensitive to the usuals. And so we had to, we had to figure that out from that swab actually. And that was an interesting case because it was like swab 2 years ago and all of a sudden this MRSA shows up and we were really glad that we actually had the swab.
Right.
So I am hesitant to use BEG too much because there is talk about resistance with gentamicin. So that's why I kind of like to start with Argentin 23. If I retest in say 3 months, I mean, kids like maybe 3 to 6 months. If I haven't gotten rid of the Marcon's, I might prescribe a silver EDTA with Mucolox from Hopkinton, but I won't do it if I think they're going to be sensitive to stinging. And I say this from experience because I've done every single treatment I've asked a patient to do. If you have post-nasal drip, it sometimes stings going back down your throat. So some kids are not going to want to do that and some are going to be just fine. So I think that if I can prepare them for what the treatment is going to be, same with a nasoneb, if I can say, you know, try this and to make it a little more comfortable, here's some things you can do, it might work. So the thing is that, again, the silver EDTA with Mucolox is more effective. It also is more expensive. It also might sting a little bit. So I'm not going to go there first. But I do think it's pretty effective. So the other option, the non-stinging, would be a compounded med, which I would send the culture and sensitivity report to the compounding pharmacist and they would make something that works. And I generally am not putting amphotericin B in there because it stings. So if I'm going to use ampho B, I'll use it in a nasoneb because it doesn't sting that way.
Good point. You need to know your medicine. I mean, personally, on a personal level, try it all. Yeah. Or at least know, you know, what it typically, you know, how you typically respond to it. So, okay. Yeah. Do kids get away with nasal rinses or any other things like this? Or?
Oh, the Neil Med. Yeah. So I sometimes have families often that have done a Neil Med, if they're going to, you know, the squeezy up the nose,
yeah,
you know, neti pot, usually if they've done that before, because you know, mom or dad's had them do it from sickness or something, then yeah, we might use a compounded med in there, which we've done before. So it's possible depending on the age and the compliance and whatnot of the kid. Sure.
And there you would get the compounded med in a capsule and open it up. Now, please use non-contaminated water, right?
Yes.
So if you use water from a well that has parasites in it, that's not so great, right? Or other bacteria. So it really does need to be.
Yeah, it should be distilled, right?
Right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
In the ideal world, yes. Please do that. Don't do the ladder. Yeah, good. Okay. So thank you.
Lastly, I will say, Ayurvedically speaking, when there is a lot of sinus congestion, it is excess kapha. So it's the heavy, wet, you know, think of sort of Pacific Northwest living in a mucky, you know, swampy area. Like that's what's going on in here when we have excess bacteria, build up mold, yeast, what have you. And I wouldn't be doing a full panchakarma detox on a child, but I would, depending on their sensitivity level, I would do nausea drops. So it's like drops of oil into the nose.
Oh, and yes, that actually, I remember those.
that can really blow away that damp quality because it's like, think cayenne and pepper and hot, spicy oil, and that will go in there and just kind of, I lovingly say, explode your face, but everything just sort of comes out. And that actually is how I got rid of my mold initially with my nose, was a panchakarma, was just like one treatment of nausea oil.
Wow. You sneeze, do you sneeze from that, or?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Since not everyone has their resident Ayurvedic medicine specialist, can you maybe just say a sec about like how a provider might do that, or how even maybe a mom might do that at home?
Yeah, so I would actually have a practitioner do it because in India and in Ayurvedic medicine, you kind of always want the treatment types of things. You want a practitioner watching that. So usually there's Ayurvedic practitioners, I would say, in most states. Ayurvedic doctors, not so much, but practitioners, you probably could find someone that's doing that. And it really is just hot sinus drops, but it's actually really hard to acquire that oil. So the nausea drops you get online aren't necessarily going to be the hot ones.
Right.
So that's why you actually want an Ayurvedic practitioner. I actually had to work pretty hard to get the drops that I have, and they had to come from India. Like someone went and got them from India, not like I ordered them on the Ayurveda Bay, you know, which is like the eBay of Ayurvedic medicine.
Oh, wow.
So you have to actually have someone who knows what they're doing at least the first time. And even with the kids we have done this with, they came in every time because I wanted to monitor what was coming out of their face. Basically, I mean, it's like eyes watering, your nose running, spitting, sometimes vomiting. But you're getting it out. You're kind of, and each time there's less of a severe reaction.
Yeah.
And again, that's about trust, right? And about honesty, right? Never lie to a child. Like if it's going to hurt, you tell them up front, this is going to hurt, but this is why it's worth doing. And we don't pin kids down, right?
Right.
Like they have to be part of the healing process. So, you know, the kids who let Dr. Pasek stick that stuff up their nose, it's because they trust her. They understand, she's educated them, and she didn't lie.
Yeah. No, it's very important. Very important. I know. I remember those drops. I think you do want to give people a heads up first. So yeah.
that stuff works.
It works. That's true. No, this is fascinating. I always like talking about the nose treatments, the nasal treatments, because everybody has a different perspective on them, because you always have the sort of base big or whatever conversation is there. But then there's all these little nuances that everybody has here. So from nasal agents, you know, moving on to, you know, oral agents, what do you feel, you know, kids do well with orally, or what can you give them orally, or, you know, what else can you do or externally?
Okay. So I will say, before we talk before we talk about systemic kind of oral mold detox, I always start with a regular detox first.
Okay. Because
we're going to unleash mycotoxins from here and then they're going to go down here, but they've got a terrible, you know, gut biome, and they don't have, you know, their liver isn't doing well or is congested, or they haven't, you know, they're breathing in chemicals at home or, you know, eating pesticides, what have you. They're not going to do well when we start unleashing stuff. So I do. And I know this is fearful for a lot of parents to hear and practitioners, but I do detox kids and I feel like I can do it really safely and easily. And that is one thing I want more people to understand. So kids take in more air, food, and water per cubic square inch of their bodies than adults do. And if you think about, you've got your four-year-old sitting on the couch with you and you're here and you're both breathing in the same mycotoxins, but their body is getting completely flooded with it. Right. And depending on how old they are, their liver might not be matured yet. And so the first thing, air, food, and water, we have to take care of. And that isn't that we're not taking anything orally for that. We're not necessarily supplementing. And yes, there are lots of supplements we could do, but I would say before that, just like the mold conversation about, like, before you buy an HBOT unit, get the mold out of your house. It's the same kind of thing. Check your air in your house. I mean, maybe you need to have your ducts cleaned, but that goes back to the cleaning the house conversation. But are there air purifiers and appropriate air filters and purifiers in your house? When you vacuum, do you open the doors and windows so that the dust can go out? Do you dust your house? You know, how often are you cleaning your house in terms of that? That all matters with air quality. And these little kids, especially ones crawling around on the floor, and they're just breathing it all in, right? Water quality. So almost all of my patients, I check the Environmental Working Group tap water database, which you can just Google that and put in your zip code and it will tell you how many contaminants and which contaminants are in your water supply. First thing I look at is arsenic, because that you're getting a daily dose if you're,
very common.
Bringing that in, right? So that's the first thing I'm going to look at. But look at the number of contaminants. Note that their side effect or potential side effect is always cancer. And so I'm looking at, okay, what are you using? Are you using reverse osmosis unit, grade, or a Berkey, or some kind of filtration system that's good in your house? Generally not the refrigerator filter is not good enough quality. So, and then food, of course, clean food, right? Eat food that came from the ground, no pesticides, organic, non-GMO, especially. We do test for glyphosate and sadly have found some very high levels of glyphosate in our kids. And those are kids that we have had a hard time getting well. So air, food, and water, that doesn't, for all those people that are scared to detox kids, if you start there, that makes our job really easy. And that's all stuff that parents are doing at home and that the whole family really would benefit from. So I would start there. And then if I still need to do a little bit more detox, I actually have my patients buy the book, The Toxin Solution by Joe Pizzorno, and go through it with me. And I have had plenty of kids do this with success. And yeah, there are supplements involved, but if the kids don't swallow pills, they could just do the dietary part of it. I mean, really, truly. Or we can find powders or liposomals or liquids, or we have someone who used patch vitamins for a while that we're really successful with. So we can find ways to do stuff, because we have to think about the kids who don't swallow pills, right?
Yes.
Or they're on pill fatigue, because they might be on a bunch of supplements for something else or medications. So I'm always trying to think of what is the hardest case and let's work to that lowest common denominator. So that's why I'm trying to detox your whole body first. And then it will make the mycotoxin, the mold detox a lot easier. And we probably, once we've opened up, we've put, you know, sufficient microbiome, everything is able to handle what is going to be detoxed through the colon, then I feel safe dumping out the liver and cleaning out the sinuses, sort of in that order. Yes.
Good point. Yeah, go ahead,
please. Can I add two things? Sorry. One is that Emily's absolutely right. There's been so many of our patients that just doing that, we then actually don't have to treat mold, right? Because the body handles it, especially in children. They just heal so well, right? So if you stop the insult and allow their body to do what it needs to do. The other thing is that remember that children are developing and they're getting a sense, especially depending on the age, of who they are in the world. And a child who has had chronic illness often thinks of themselves as chronically ill. And so what Emily didn't say that she does so well is the education piece, right? So she explains this to them. And then when they detoxify themselves and get better, see, we didn't talk about illness at all. We only talked about not putting crap in your body. And that is very empowering for these teens, let's say, who then do what she said and never had to hear that they were chronically ill. And so, you know, I think, again, my plug for pediatrics is that what we didn't talk about is the developmental phase they're in. And it, you know, you can say to an adult, this is what you've got. You say that to a kid and they kind of own it, or, you know, it becomes part of their self-actualization. And we don't want that. So if M says, let's detoxify your body, and they heal themselves, well, that's super empowering too.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Definitely. No, I mean, this is why this is great. You know, this is a, you know, different game sometimes with how we communicate things and how we, you know, how quickly we jump into this, you know, the higher interventions, which, you know, sometimes we can get overly excited about, like, oh yeah, I got this really cool thing that worked for this last person, you know, but no, the foundations are, you know, key. And that's everything you guys said. I appreciate that. So if you get past that now, oh, what's next?
I think that
if they're still sick.
Yeah. So with kids, I'm going to try to use something that is going to kill two birds with one stone. And so I have to think again, lowest common denominator, let's just say they can't take pills, even though a lot of them can, fiber. So fiber is going to do all the great things like create microbial diversity, improve your digestion and whatnot, but it's also acting as a binder. So yes, it's more of a weak binder than compared to something like cholestyramine, or Welchol, or even charcoal, but it's something that is really easy to add to a kid's regimen. Mm-hmm. They might not even notice. There are so many fiber supplements you can stir into water they can't even taste or see. And so I'm trying to use something that, let's say there, we're trying to tackle all these different issues. I want it to do multiple things. So if we're going to use magnesium, there's probably a great magnesium powder that they also are using to kind of calm their nervous system. Because in a lot of these cases, they're on sympathetic overdrive, right? So we're trying to calm the body. So we can also use magnesium as sort of a cofactor for, you know, we're always trying to treat mitochondrial health with all of this mitochondrial dysfunction. So we're trying to get as many of those cofactors in there as possible. So I might add, my favorite supplement is MitoCore because it does everything. And you can actually get MitoCore in a powder, as like a protein powder. And so if I needed to find one supplement that did everything, it would be MitoCore. And it does come in capsules. So if someone needs capsules, that's probably the one thing I'm going to use. It's a multivitamin, multimineral, does detox. It has a full 600 milligrams of NAC. It has acetyl L-carnitine. It's sort of a combination product that if I just want to add one thing, because oftentimes we're not trying to add 12 supplements for a kid. So honestly, if I had to pick one supplement, that would be it for overall health, for healing from mold, not our acute mold protocol, which is the lumbar kinase and the glutathione and whatnot.
Right on. Let's see how we're doing with time here. No, we're doing not too bad. I wanted to kind of bring this all home here, though, because we're almost out of time. Each of you guys could answer this question too, if you like, but what is your go-to, or rather try this on Monday morning, recommendation for all the viewers here when dealing with somebody recently exposed to mold or water damaged buildings? Is it what you already said, or, you know, have some other nuances? What's the first thing you want really people to really think about or drive home here?
Make sure you're not living in it, right? Like if you call me from a hotel room and you think it was mold in the hotel room, do not call me from the hotel room. Call me from a different hotel, right? Like every moment you're spending in there, that's horrible. So that would be absolutely the first thing, which we've sort of, that's more of what we said before. And then maybe I'll just speak to why we came up with this protocol, right? Is just for a few days, is that if you think about what the cascade that occurs in sort of biochemically when there's mold exposure, right? Is that, you know, all illness comes down to inflammation, right? So it makes an inflammatory cytokine crisis that is then sort of like going, right? And what happens is I think that most of the symptoms that we have are due to then sort of gumming up of the small vasculature and not getting enough oxygen to the tissues, specifically the brain. And then, you know, mitochondria get messed up too, which speaks to Emily's, but sort of acutely, what I notice is that my brain just no longer works, right? And so that's why we use the three things that we talked about. So one is the GI detox, which is kind of a nice, I don't know why it has to be GI detox, but it just sort of does. And you know, it's got a combination of different binders in it. We have them take two twice a day in that acute phase. And then, so that's just sort of removing anything we can that got into your system quickly, sort of to stop the match. Then we use the lumbar kinase, and I explain this to kids that it's worm spit. You know, it's all about marketing, right? And that's sort of fun. You know, humor heals, especially with kids, love and humor. Like, you cannot forget that. I should have said that was first again. I hear you. I hear you're scared. I'm with you. And so lumbar kinase, I explained to them, is worm spit, and that, you know, it's how earthworms get through the dirt. They kind of excrete it. And I don't know how they got the worms to spit in this product, but let's not think about that. And then what it kind of does is Roto-Rooters out the small vessels, right? So now I'm able to get some more oxygen in, and blood flow to my tissues, you know, get exchange, removal of toxins and nutrition to the cells. And then we use the oxygen because that's what's not getting to the brain, right? And I mean, they turn around in like 10 minutes. It's like they come in and they're curled up in the chair. We have them do their GI detox and their lumbar kinase at home. Of course, the lumbar kinase needs to be without food. Otherwise, it's just a very expensive digestive agent. So you want to take, we usually, if they're really in crisis, we'll have two twice a day, but often it's just one twice a day away from food during this 3-day trial. And then we have them come in for the oxygen. They come up like kind of curled up in the chair, kind of grouchy and sad. And then like by the end of the 10-minute treatment, my nurse said, oh yeah, she looks fine again. And they sort of brighten up, and that kind of wears off when they leave, but that's why they come back for a few days. But it, like, it's pretty remarkable.
Try that's just it giving them oxygen. That's just giving
yeah.
them
oxygen. Oh yeah. So 2 liters by nasal cannula. This is just like straightforward oxygen.
Yeah.
And I would also say that we use that protocol for flying too. So this is just like another pearl to use on Monday, is that, and I know this just from experience, that when you fly, they drop the oxygen pressure. And you know, Henry's law says that you can get more gas into liquid phase, into, you know, diffused into a liquid at increased pressure, right? Well, the reverse is true too. Like, you're going to get less of that in decreased pressure. And, you know, so you have less oxygen pressure on an airplane, which for a normal person with nice open vessels might be just fine. For someone with SIRS, you know, where it's already gummed up, you're not, the red blood cells often can't get all the way into the small vasculature. So you're sort of counting on the oxygen that's in the plasma. And so we'll often have them come get 10 minutes of oxygen when they've landed. And I have them take lumbar kinase before flying. And I mean, that alone is pretty remarkable.
Just for the viewers, for fun, what's your favorite lumbar kinase?
Yeah. You know how, I don't know if it's superstition, but you sort of, for me, it has to be GI detox and it has to be lumbar kinase. And is that the allergy research group? Yeah. And, you know, I learned that from someone probably 10 years ago. Like, this is the one since I know it works, I would never try anything else.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Would you like to add anything, Emily? What do we want to think about on Monday? Oxygen, right?
So we have the same protocols. So probably yes. Nothing, but I do think yes. that it would be beneficial.
Oh, glutathione. I'm sorry. Yes, glutathione. Yes.
Yeah. Glutathione.
I think it would be good. We have one really short kind of case study that Cynthia wants to kind of to bring it all together in 2 minutes or less. So
that's fine. Please.
If you want to do that?
Okay.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we have enough time. We're good.
Okay. So this was just sort of to explain to you again that like how it's not just about treating mold, right? So we had this interesting patient. Well, I mean, one of our patients, right, came into the clinic actually because her family joined because the sister had chronic headaches and abdominal pain and wasn't going to school. Teenager, right? So, but she was sort of the normal one, and I just saw her for general peds. And then she got dysregulated, which sometimes happened, and showed up with what looked like pandas. And I think it was pandas. But so I treated her pandas and she sort of got better. But but she would get dysregulated so quickly from mold exposure. And it was very obvious to me that it was mold. And one of the things that was really interesting is mom said she wasn't doing well. She came in. I also had her see the child psychologist who's in our clinic, who's amazing. And the child psychologist and I saw her on the same day. And Dr. Shelley, who's our child psychologist, pulled me aside while the kid was there and said, this kid is having an acute psychotic break. I know you're treating her for pandas, but right now she's having an acute psychotic break. We have to send her over. She's not safe to the psych ward for immediate admission. And like, I don't know that Shelley's ever said that to me. So I was like, oh my gosh. I said, well, can we just wait until I see her? Because let me see her first. So I see her first. And this is this girl who's a cheerleader, totally popular. Everything's normal. Until this, and she like was wearing this like tube suit and like pulled it over her head, and she was jumping up and down on my chair. She turned up. She was telling me jokes through her bum. Like she was like, I mean, like, I don't even know. So I said, okay, wait. So I asked, you know, we asked some questions. It sounded like she had had an acute mold exposure, and so we gave her 10 minutes of oxygen, and she like calmed down and was sane. And I went, okay, so now I have data that this is about oxygenation, right? And everything else. So I pulled Dr. Shelley back in and I said, Dr. Shelley, is this a woman that you wouldn't send over for a psych admission? She was like, I know that you work magic, but I don't even know what to say, right? So then we had to figure out the mold exposure, and we did in the house. And everyone in the house got better. I mean, go figure, right? But this kid still, like one spray of Marcon's treatment, and she would dysregulate for a long time. And her family members weren't as sensitive to mold, ended up having some parasitic issues, and they had very big health issues that Emily ended up fixing by treating parasites. But still, this kid, she would be well, and then her pandas would flare, and we would go, oh my gosh, you moved a box in the garage that used to be in the attic where there was mold, and she walked through the garage. And like, but it seemed to me that the thread I needed to pull was mold. Right? Because that's what would dysregulate her pandas. And then she ended up with frank adrenal insufficiency and mast cell disorder and POTS, right? So I had her on like all these chronic meds, but if I could handle those, take away the mold, she would write back up again pretty fast because she's a teenager and we have these tricks. And then she did hot yoga. This is just recently. And so she's well enough to do hot yoga, right? Oh my gosh, she dysregulated completely. I put her on hydrocortisone, that didn't do it. I treated her mast cells, it didn't do it. I treated her pandas, it didn't do it. We detoxified her from mold, it didn't do it. And I was completely stuck. So I sent her to Emily. And actually, I had Tiffany, my nurse, work with her too. And I said to you guys, I'm stuck. So you guys better figure this out for me. Like, what? I need a clue. And Emily says, well, what? And Tiffany said too, they had talked, like, don't you think it's parasites since everyone else in the family needed parasitic treatment? And I was like, oh shoot. Oh. So we did like 3 days of parasitic treatment. It's like so simple. It was one product. We like, I mean, we use a lot of different products, but this one happened to be for this family. It works really well, which is Des Bio Pathgar. And we did 3 pills every day for 3 days, and she, and I went, oh my gosh, like, of course. So why was she so exquisitely sensitive to mold? We hadn't pulled the bottom thing. So that's all I just wanted to say. And I'm sure that story will be ongoing, that like, this is a great example of like, mold was the issue, but we were going to be talking about mold forever until we figured out that parasites was what was filling her buck.
Yeah, no, that's a good reminder, because like I said in the beginning, sometimes we are convinced that it's, you know, all the mold, and the mold is the big, right. Is a big dysregulator, yes. But you know, the parasites are probably more elusive sometimes than the mold, yeah. for example, you right. know, so there may be something else kind of underlying that under that surface. So yeah, no, that's why I love this team care approach, and, you know, having different folks looking at it, and different expertise, different backgrounds all coming together. And that's great. So you guys want to, any final thoughts before we sign off for today? And I really do appreciate you guys taking your time on a Saturday to talk to me about this medicine. And I really appreciate all the work that you guys do. And yeah, any final thoughts? Floor is yours.
I think that's it. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, you guys take care. And thank you once again for participating in the Mold Summit here. And I will talk to you in the near future, I'm sure. All right. Have a good day. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, Jamie.